Hey guys, welcome back to Percussion Perspective. This is Kevin.
This is Remy.
And on today's episode, we're going to chat about some technique things that we see consistently in our beginning percussion classes as a way to help you just kind of see issues with your kids and maybe be able to fix things. So we're going to chat about small little things that we see our kids do that are wrong that we want to fix. And we feel like we see these things daily. And so they're just really good things to point out to teachers. So, Remy, how are you doing this fine day?
I'm good, man. We're reunited. Thanks for doing that episode last time. I have been really busy, as you know, because you're my best friend.
Oh, I know.
But we had our second kid about a little over a month ago. And so is this the first time we've actually recorded since he was born?
Yes.
Or have we
this
recorded?
This is the first time we've recorded. So yeah, congratulations on baby.
Thanks. He is cool. You know, there's not.
What is he? How is he cool? Tell me how he's cool.
Well, he lays around all day and gets everybody to do everything for him.
So then sometimes I'm cool.
Yeah, sometimes.
Not really.
But yeah, it's been good. You know, that's kid number two, and it's definitely a lot different the second time around, but you know, you're not here to, this isn't a parenting podcast. But anyway, it's been good. I've just, you know, obviously been really busy, and, school is really, you know, we're in that season of, end of year concerts and trips and solo and ensemble, like, all the stuff is happening right now, and that just makes it really tough. You know, anyways, this is a tough time of year anyways for anybody. And then, you know, having a little baby at the same time is just makes it more interesting. And then I was also sick, and that was ultimately the reason that Kevin recorded that episode, two weeks ago or whatever. Because my voice was completely gone. It was like, I got sick over the weekend, kind of had a sore throat, then went to school Monday, you know, talked / yelled at kids all day. And then the next day my voice was gone and we didn't have any, that was like the only day we had to record and I couldn't talk at all. So you did it by yourself. I thought it was good. I listened to it.
Thanks.
Thought you did a good job.
Yeah, and it's funny, that episode,
it was clean.
What?
I said it was clean. Are you going to say that was our top performing episode?
I was going to say, yeah, it's crazy, but yeah, that one, that's our, that episode got 1 million streams.
Yeah, dang. Okay, well, and that means that you get all the money for that.
We get no money.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot to handle, you know, in a new kid, and yeah, end of the year, we're all kind of trying to hang on. The kids are trying to hang on. We were going to take some kids to an amusement park on Saturday, and
I love being amused.
Yeah, we were on the way there and the weather was terrible and they found out that the park was not even going to open, and so had to got out of that, I guess, out of hanging out in an amusement park all day.
Did you guys just turn around and go
home?
Yeah,
they just turned around,
went
home and
eat.
No, they literally just like, everybody call your parents. We're going to be back at the band hall. Come get picked up.
Yeah, how far did you go?
Well, I was driving myself, but I think they made it about probably 30, 45 minutes.
And okay, so they did not quite.
No, it wasn't. So it was funny. They did have one kid got on the bus or was getting off the bus and was cussing out one of our band directors. He said,
what?
He said, this is BS, but he actually it. And
oh,
it was,
gosh,
just hearing the story, it was funny, but I know in the moment, not funny, but
yeah, he got punched. That kid got punched.
Yeah,
by
for
the
sure.
Director.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, yeah, let's talk about some mistakes, some common technique errors that we see, hopefully, you know, us talking about them. I'm sure there's similar things that you guys, listeners, see in your kids. But if not, maybe it will, you know, help you know what to look for. I think we could also title this Things I Say Every Day.
Yeah.
That's how we had it in like our list of topics. And that's kind of how I wrote them down. So like a lot of these things are just, it's just like a phrase that I end up saying, and my students know exactly what it means. Or sometimes it's not even saying something. Sometimes it's just like holding your hand up and turning it, and they're like, "Oh, right, yeah. Sorry." So you want to start us off with your first one?
Sure. So, I think right off the bat, when you're trying to teach kids how to count, having them tap their foot is really, really good. And I think everyone in the band world knows that. So that's not really my actual point. But my point is tapping their foot aggressively. I think there can be a lot of kids who, when you're doing this process, they're kind of just being either timid or wimpy or weak about it. And I don't know if there's actually studies on this kind of thing, but it just makes sense to me that when you have a kid, if they're playing, tapping their foot, counting or whatever, if you have them do the thing more aggressively, whether it's louder or just harder or something, then it actually makes their brain think harder and makes them smarter, if that makes any sense. So like when you have a kid tapping their foot more aggressively, then it further strengthens the like timekeeping thing you're trying to get them to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know of any studies of that, but just anecdotally, like I say that to my kids all the time. And we'll talk about it here in a little bit on one of mine. But yeah, just doing anything with more intensity, like just following that train of thought, if you're doing it more intense, your brain is like working harder at that task. So it would make sense that you would do better at it. And it happens all the time. Like, you know, just I'll just go ahead and say it. One of mine is like counting loud. Okay. So like when we do like snare drum pass offs or whatever, or when we're going through a new lesson in the book, it's usually like, count it. And then like they air play along while I play it. And then we all play it together. That's kind of like, if we're just doing like snare drum stuff, that's kind of like the order of operations: count it, air stick, and then we play it. And, a lot of the times that first time through, the counting is like real weak and they don't do super great. And it's like, hey guys, let's just everybody count like 10% louder. Like just count louder. You don't have to yell, just count louder, make it clear and try to stay and like, you know, stay together, be more intense or whatever about it. And literally 100% of the time it's way better. And then I always say, wasn't that better, guys? And they're like, yeah. Yeah. It's like, okay, well then why don't you just try the first time instead of having to. So yeah, that's one of them. It's just counting loud, like getting kids to buy in. And it's not just so that it sounds better. It's like some kids and especially like in high school, like my high schoolers love it when I make them. They don't. I'm being facetious. They hate when I make them count rhythms. And it's like, and I get it. They're like, I'm not in middle school anymore. And it's like, well, okay, but my middle schoolers can count that rhythm. Why can't you? And so it's like, I really, really believe that if you can't count something, you don't truly know the rhythm. Like you don't truly understand the rhythm. You might be able to play the rhythm, but still like you don't know that that's a te or that that's a ta or that that's beat four or whatever. So anyway, counting loud, that's something that I have to tell my beginners a lot. Make sure we're counting loud. And then it goes along with your foot stuff, just like putting energy into it so that you're actually feeling the beat, you know, not just kind of lazily tapping your foot. Making the beat physical is what that's about.
Yeah. And I think when you tell the class like, hey, we're going to count louder, it might even make some of those kids who weren't even doing it, it might make them actually do it. So it's kind of like a two-tier.
Yeah, because you always get those kids that are like, well, you know, if you're watching this right now, you'll see. But the kids that are just like.
Right. Yeah.
Just kind of like moving their mouth in time and looking around side to side. And that's like a dead giveaway. Like, dude, you're not even looking at the music. Obviously, you're not counting it. And then you're just kind of like licking your lips and opening your mouth. Like, you're not saying anything. So, Yeah, I was actually talking to one of my friends who is also a percussion director, and he was saying that when they do their snare drum pass offs, they also have to count them out loud. Like, it's not just performing it, they have to count it out loud. And it's like, oh, I'm going to start using that next year. Like, any snare drum pass off, you count it and you play it.
Well, and it, especially with beginners, like if they you have to instill in them that they have to still be counting the rhythm in their head, whether it's a new rhythm or it's still all the way back to like quarter notes. Like, if they're not doing it in their head, then they end up like messing up more. Like, we're learning our concert pieces now, and like the rhythms and the snare parts, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. And like, they're messing it up. And I'm like, why are you messing up? They're like, we're not counting. I'm like, okay. And just do it. And then they end up doing it. So it's annoying when they don't do what we tell them.
Yeah, that's what this whole episode is about.
My next one is going to go kind of, I mean, this should go all the way back to beginning of the year, but just, I think you have this one too, but like technique wise, when they're holding onto the sticks or the mallets, that you need to just have the right hand position all the time. And that's something that you really monitor this from the get go, like as soon as you do it. But it's still something that, you know, it's April and I'm still saying this, or actually it's going to be May. It's going to be May. Yeah,
we didn't plan that.
When you guys are hearing this, but anyway, it's April and the kids are still like, they're not doing it on purpose. They're just still back in like,
some of them.
They're still in like a bad habit of holding their sticks a little sideways or the other way. So just make sure that you've got the top of their hand is still basically flat and they've got a good starting position, which is something I still like in the middle of a count off. I'll like look, just kind of glance really quick and just notice like, oh, fix your hand. And then I start again. So that's something that I say still almost all the time.
Yeah. So I've got two that go with that, but it's really like, we talk about it in like front of hand, back of hand, right? So like the front of your hand's your fulcrum and the back of your hand would be your back fingers. So there's like two things that I'll always say is like tighten up, right? So like, you shouldn't have a gap in your fulcrum. I remember one of my teachers saying like, I could drive a truck through there or whatever. But you know, like where your thumb and index finger come together, you can put your thumb and index finger together and still have a gap on top of the stick. And the problem with that is if you try to play a downstroke, then there's still like an open cavity, you know, above the stick where there's, you know, there's not as much resistance. And so the stick can move into that spot,
flop around.
Yeah. And then you don't have you effectively have like what I call the caveman fulcrum or a caveman grip. That fulcrum is like, I see loose fulcrums a lot. And then I see like back fingers off the stick, but not in the way of like where they're open. It's like where they're holding the stick like this with just a fulcrum. And it's like, you know, when I teach them, I talk about like corner to corner. If the palm of your hand is like a square, then you want the stick to go corner to corner. That way your back fingers can actually be wrapped around, right? And then you get kids that play like this and they just like accidentally get diddles all the time because they're not controlling the back of the stick. So yeah, those two things. I mean, I would say 75% of my kids have a pretty good handle on that. I don't know if you're ever going to get 100% of kids in that first year to really get, you know, the grip down completely. But every year I'm like, all right, this is the year I'm going to explain it so well. I'm going to explain it so well. The first week of school, everyone's just going to look awesome. And then I think what happens is they do look pretty good for like the first maybe week or two, but then maybe I'm like, oh, everything's looking good. I can probably like let off the gas a little bit. And then, you know, like those old, I don't even say habits because they don't have any habits at that point, but they just kind of, the technique just starts to like break down a little bit. So one thing that I've tried to do in the last few weeks, and you know, this is where you and I talk about this all the time. it gets really frustrating. These times of the year get really frustrating because I just want to be playing in class. Like, I just want to be playing and teaching fundamentals and techniques and learning new rhythms or rudiments or whatever. But we're like having to get ready to play garage band with a bunch of hammers and drills, or like, you know, like we're just doing beginning band stuff or spring concert stuff rather than getting better at percussion. And I know that makes you better at the same time, but like, does it some, you know? So, but one thing I've done, I've been talking for a long time. I need to let you talk. I don't get to talk to anybody anymore since I just have two babies. I talk to my wife. We have a good relationship. where am I?
I need to have like a sound effect right there. It's like, oh.
Yeah. Wah, wah, wah. Now I'll say this and then I'll shut up. One thing I've been doing recently to fix this is just have like, hey, show me your best set position right now. And everyone immediately like stands up tall, gets their elbows out, like go, they look good. And it's like, okay, great. Now play eight on a hand and don't move from this position. You know what I mean? Like, don't be tense, but just stay there. Stay that the idea of a set position is so that you play from it, not so that you can do that. And then when you start playing, you just like go to whatever. So go to hobo position.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things where the teacher needs to really, really stay on the kids past when you think it's okay. Kind of like what you said with the technique. It's like, you got to stay on them, or you will have kids that will not that they're doing it on purpose, but they just stray away from that technique when they're focused on other things. So,
yeah.
My next one is playing 99% of the time with a relaxed technique and using rebound strokes. So, I mean, I can imagine a seventh grader right now that I have that still, like, if we're playing 16th notes, any kind of variation of 16th note combinations, that she plays just too stiff still. And that's like, do you realize that you're slow? She's like, yeah. I'm like, that's because you're playing too tight. And then immediately she loosens up and it's fine. So as you're learning new things or faster things, that always, always, always still playing extremely relaxed and thinking I'm eventually going to play this faster. And the only way to do that is to play it really loose. And so never let them start to like tense up with anything that they're playing. Even if you're playing like straight eighth notes, like single stroke roll or whatever, that they're not doing it with these really tight, firm, aggressive downstrokes, that they're still like the sticks kind of like, I use this term lightly, but kind of flopping around in the hands with still a lot of control. So they don't tighten up. So basically don't let a kid eventually tighten up their grip so much that they can't, they can't play anything faster than, you know, 100 beats per minute or 120 or whatever, because they've gotten into a bad habit.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Thank you.
Like staying relaxed. You're welcome. Staying relaxed is important, especially like you said, to build speed. If you start, you can start with a little bit of tension and get away with it because you're not really playing anything fast.
Yeah.
But as soon as you start to like bump up the tempo on those 16th rhythms, then it's like, or even just like fast eighths, kids start to slow down.
Or really, really fast quarter notes.
Yeah. Really fast breaths.
I mean, it just depends it depends on the tempo. So any note can really be fast. Depending upon.
Yeah. That's one. I remember getting in an art, like, well, not an argument, but you know, I was screaming at a kid. No, he was like insisting that the, you know, like, I'm playing 16th notes. Digga, 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 digga. And I was like, well, those could be anything. Like, those could be 32nd notes. This could be quarter notes. This could be whole notes. Just depends on your tempo. It's like, no, they sound like 16ths. It's like, man.
Okay. You're like arguing with a kid just because.
Yeah, just because. I'm like, I'm right. Anyway. Okay, let's see. My next one. I tell kids downward angle all the time. And you know, it's there.
Like,
you know, when you think about like that,
a downward angle,
yeah, away from you, so that you only hit the rim. Perfect. All the time. No, practice pad is flat, and then you know, if your practice pad is at the correct height, when you're at set, you should just have like a real nice, like not mate shallow. I don't know. A real nice, easy downward angle from your elbow all the way down to the bead of the stick. And that's how I teach it to them. But you get kids that will like, I'm like trying to demonstrate here. They like drop their arm too much and then they flatten out their wrist. So if you can imagine like pulling your wrist back towards your forearm, but then making that the top of that wrist, they know their wrist has to be flat. So they like make their wrist flat with the practice pad. Well, the problem with that is when you do that, you've used like 90% of your wrist motion, right? Just to hold it flat there. And then you like, you can't use your wrist to move the stick. So then you're like moving your arm awkwardly. So that's one thing that I have to tell several kids every day is like, watch for that downward angle. And I'll throw this in there, like the 90-degree angle too, like in between both of your sticks. Just looking strong. Like that's the biggest thing is like, you have to look strong. You have to look confident, and it doesn't have to be a perfect 90 degrees. It doesn't have to be an exact, 5.62 degree angle or whatever. But you need both of those, like downward angle, you have to have so that you avoid hitting the rim on a drum, right? If your stick is flat, then you're never going to hit the head of the drum. You can get away with it with a practice pad if it doesn't have a rim. And then that 90-degree angle is a good baseline because that's what puts your hands in the right spot to play at the right spot on the drum and all of that stuff.
Yeah. I know a lot of it is what we're saying is like, duh. Like it's stuff that we're saying that like you should fix all this in week one, but these aren't things that just go away, especially for beginners.
Yeah.
I could even probably have high school kids that still are like not the best.
Totally.
When it comes to that.
Everybody kind of gets into their own technique. And I'm not saying I have perfect technique either. Everyone kind of, finds their own ways to make things work. And that's fine. Generally I think our responsibility as a percussion director is to create like an archetype or a way of doing things, an average way of doing things to where sure everybody can tweak it. Like if they try to learn that way, they go down that path. And then as they get older, they tweak little things to make it a little bit easier for how their bone structure is or how, whatever feels a little bit easier for them, that's fine. But, you want to teach the same way every year so that all of your kids are hopefully going to end up playing with the same approach, over time.
Yeah.
And these are just those things that we just say all the time, the problems that we see repeatedly with beginners, with middle school kids. And like you said, even some high school kids.
Yeah, I had a kid come up one day and they showed me a video of, I can't remember who the drummer was, but he was like, why does his hands look so bad? And it was like, I can't remember who the drummer was now, but it was like a successful drummer.
Yeah.
And I was like,
Benny Greb or something.
Like, well, are you saying that Benny Greb has bad technique?
Yeah. Me? No, I'm not. Okay. I mean, he doesn't have good concert snare technique.
We don't know that.
But he's, that's true. I don't know that.
Anyway, but
you're talking about like drum set players like play French who rip might a just lot, right?
Like, and so you're like watching them play and you're what's like, wrong with this guy? Or something. So I always tell them, it's like, these kids or these guys probably started in band maybe when they were younger, maybe they didn't. And they probably learned hopefully a correct technique. But I always tell them, it's like, we're not teaching you wrong. We're teaching you right. And then there's also some other rights that you might come across. But anyway. Okay. Yeah. Is it my turn?
When you make millions of dollars, you can decide how you want to hold your drumsticks.
Is it me?
I don't know, man. Probably. Yeah.
Okay. So this one's obvious too, but like, make sure your kids aren't slicing when they play. So bringing the stick straight up and down as close as you can to straight up and down, which again would just all probably relate to their hand position. If they're holding their hand a little bit if their top of their hand is facing more out away from them, then they're going to slice. So just being cautious on lifting straight up and down as much as possible and not bringing their hands kind of out like wings and then slicing down into the practice pad. That'll just cause issues later and speed issues and snare drum contact issues and timing and all that kind of stuff. So I don't say that one super often. I think that's just like a random, if the kid's not paying attention or something, they might be slicing a little bit and I'm just like, hey, don't do that. And they're like, oh yeah, okay. And then they fix it.
Yeah. I don't notice that one very often. That doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. You definitely get it when kids start learning traditional in their left hand. You like people that, you know, it's like, oh, hey, you know how we've been playing match grip forever? All right, just completely throw that out the window for one of your hands. And we're gonna hold the stick completely differently and move it completely differently. And I don't know. I can't bring myself to have my snare players and play match grip in marching band. I don't know if that's just old school or what.
I feel like if my kids didn't care that much, then like, I don't know. I would like think about it.
Oh, like your kids want to play traditional?
Yeah, they're like, They're not coming
well,
up to
and
me
my
every
kids
year
are
going,
like that
can we
too.
Play matched?
My kids are like that too, but I think that's me. Like
part
oh,
well,
of
me
too.
Me too. I'm not saying I want to play match grip, but the logic of it, it's like these kids like start to get really good in eighth grade or something, and you're like, okay, guys, here we go. You're not only going to learn four mallets, but you're also going to learn how to hold this stick completely different. And hopefully you can play exactly as good as you are right now.
Yeah. We should do an episode or something on how to teach traditional grip.
Let's do it right now. Hey guys, welcome back to, all right, what's your next one?
It kind of goes with the last one also. Another setup one. So I call it T-Rexing, and it's basically like playing from your hips, you know? Yeah, like that, where your wrists are almost, I've got probably, I don't know, maybe three kids out of my 18 or 19 kids in sixth grade, got like three of them that T-Rex all the time. And it causes two issues. But basically it's like, you know, the inside of their wrist, they almost play from their hips, like their forearms are touching their bodies. And so, when you do that, they tend to only move from the wrist. They don't ever use any arm support. Right. And it's obviously you move from the wrist first. And I tell that, you know, we like all of my kids are really good about doing that. But then it's like, you should also use a little bit of arm, like that arm is there to absorb some impact and to help your wrist in certain things, help get volume, help get velocity, help get weight. And if you're like, you know, if your wrist is against something, then you're not going to move your arm because it's going to like rub up and down. So you kind of just end up, those kids end up just placing their wrist there and then only moving from their wrist. And then it also will cause slices or cause weird sounds and weird playing positions, because if they're playing from their hips, then they're playing with like an acute angle. They're not playing at a 90. And so that causes issues too. So yeah, that's one thing that I see a lot is like stop T-Rexing or open up, you know, 90 degrees, that type of stuff. But I say that, you know, to probably one or two kids every other day, at least.
Yeah, I just say like open up your hands. It's just like, and
I give this long explanation.
No.
You're like,
I was just saying that's one I probably should have had on my list. Is like open your hands up. You're like one, two, hands ready. Yeah,
and they do this and drop their sticks.
I could probably think of a better term. Open up your hand. Open up your arms. Open up your sticks. Something, but just
open up your angle.
Yeah, open up your angle. And I think a good teacher also can. Like your kids know what to do when you can say something really fast like that. Like they've gotten really good at knowing, oh, Mazarko just said, open up your hands. It's like, oh yeah, I know exactly what that means or whatever it is. So yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what I was saying is like, I just have all these phrases here, and you generally, especially by the times a kid is like a seventh or eighth grader. Yeah. You can just say one thing and they're just like, oh, okay. And they know it, but it's like, how do you get a kid to that point where, you know, and it'll be like every 2 weeks, I'll just completely stop class. And I'll be like, guys, if I say something to you, like not the class, like an individual, if I say something to you as an individual, and I'm addressing the whole class here, I'm not like pointing at one individual kid, but I'm, you know, like if I say something to you over and over and over and over, what do you need to be thinking about trying to fix? And they're like, that thing. And it's like, yeah. So like, and take, you know, take advantage of that when we're like warming up, you know, not when we're trying to learn how to read 6-8 or 5-8 or whatever, like take advantage of that when we're playing eights and bucks and crescendos and 4-2-1 and stuff like that. Because you shouldn't have to think about those exercises anymore. You know, that's your time to, oh, Mr. Thornton always tells me to watch, you know, my corner to corner in my backhand or whatever. So when we play this whole time, when we play warmups for 5 or 6 minutes, I'm just going to think about that. So yeah, it's just getting your kids to understand to like, put that, I tell them like, put that in the front of your mind all the time, you know, that those little technique issues. But yeah, that's a really, really useful tool for sure, is make sure that all of your kids, and I say this a lot too, like, do you guys know what I mean when I say this? And because, you know, then when you're like chasing the drum line around on the field, like you can just give a couple little like hand gestures or say a couple words real quick and everybody knows exactly what you need them to do.
Yeah. Be consistent as a teacher and your kids will start to learn what you're saying.
Yeah.
My next one is
It's my turn. It's my turn. Oh wait, it is your turn. Is it mine?
No,
mine.
You did. My you turn. Did the
Kevin.
You
I don't
did
know.
The
okay.
The
I'm a father.
The T-Rex.
I don't drum like that.
Anyway, prep the sticks the and eighth note before they play. That's my next thing. So like, make sure your kids are not just lifting their, like if you're like 1-2 ready and their kids already like hands are up, unless you've told them to, like unless you're kind of practicing rebound strokes on day one or whatever, but yeah, so have them.
That reminded me of Talladega Nights where Ricky Bobby was like, I don't know what to do with my hands. Yeah, you get that kid. I'm gonna start calling that Ricky Bobby.
I don't
Bobby-ing.
Think those kids would understand.
They wouldn't. They don't even know.
And then so you're like, all right, guys, let's watch it.
Right, here we go.
It's
and then I'm
movie.
Packing up all my stuff and getting fired.
Yeah, so have your kids lift their sticks up to like the prep, right? Have them prep it just like the eighth note before they play. So 1-2 ready go and boom
prep.
Yeah, I don't think that was gonna line up, but maybe it did.
It did for me.
Of course it did. So yeah, just have them. Like that's part of the rhythmic journey and learning how to play is when to prep their stick, because you can, it's kind of like in marching band. Like you want to, if they're all going to take a step together, you want them to push off with their back foot at the same time. So prepping their sticks at the right time is going to help them all play together. And it's going to just like, they're about to play in time. So if they prep in time, it's going to help. So I still have kids who will sometimes their stick just kind of come up a little bit before. I never have they never come up late from what I notice. It's either they do it right or they just kind of float the stick up a little bit right before they start. So I think that's one that I still see, not really often, but decently often, if you can put those two words together.
Yeah. Decently oftenly. I have the same thing, and you basically said it right there. We have this thing in class that I do, especially at the beginning of the year, where like I say prep in time and then they say play in time right back. So it's like prep in time, play in time, like that. It's great. I don't know why that's funny. They're 11 years old,
because
so they like it.
Because I don't make fun of them, but I always say, sometimes you guys remind me that you just came out of elementary school. And that's
why
a very elementary school thing to do. Say it again for our listeners. No, one more time.
You're going to make
I won't laugh this time. Do it
again.
Prep in time, play in time. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd be like, prep in time.
You guys should get it on a shirt.
That'd be cool. crossing legs slash feet. I don't know how to
while like, they're standing.
Standing like
yeah.
Standing like a flamingo. Like weird stuff like that. Like don't let your kids do that. Teach your kids feet shoulder width apart. It like number one, and I say this all the time. Why are you laughing?
Because
so much?
I remember when I had a girl who used to stand like that. She still does, and she's in high school. I remember I said this to her, and when she was in like sixth grade, I was like, "Quit standing like you're in line at Auntie Anne's Pretzels in the mall." And she had no idea what Auntie Anne's Pretzels was, and it didn't make any sense.
That's a good one. Yeah, it's like stop standing with attitude, like the wrong attitude. Like you know, like. Feet shoulder width apart, be stable. Number one, if you're like, you know, you get the, what I'm imagining in Auntie Anne's position of standing at the mall would be like 1 foot is flat and basically like holding like 95% of the weight. And then the other one is kind of like crossed over it with like the toe pointing down. Okay. So, that's fine. Okay. That's like a comfortable way to stand for a few minutes, but then you always have to switch to the other.
Or the line's
right?
going
to
move.
Cross the, right, yeah. The line's going to move and you have to take a step. So, yeah, that's a problem. How are you going to tap your foot from that position? Right. Effectively. It really any position other than just feet shoulder width apart is like a bad position for drumming. You've got to have, I mean, I guess feet together, right? When, like for marching band, because that's the easiest thing to dress. But even still, I don't think anyone would be able to make the argument that feet together is more stable than like feet shoulder width apart. So like, that's what I tell my kids to do. Feet shoulder width apart. You can tap. Do you have them tap? We might have talked about this on the podcast already. Do you have them tap their toe or their heel?
Or whatever's comfortable for them. Yeah, I talk about toe, and then I every year without fail, I have one kid's like, it hurts my toe. Can I do it with my heel? And I'm like, as long as you prove that it's working, and it, you know, it, But I also tell my kids to put like 1 foot a little bit more forward and put their weight on the back foot. So that front foot is like free to tap.
It's something you have to work around a little bit. I think you probably aren't ever going to get 50-50.
Right. Got to like what works for the kids also.
But yeah, heel toe, I don't really care. As long as it's in time, like you said, I think more of my kids probably do the heel now, but anyway, just telling kids to uncross their legs, uncross their feet all the time, feet shoulder width apart. It just looks better, right? It kind of gets them thinking in like that marching band mindset for the future. Like we all need to look the same. We all need to be doing the same thing, moving the same way, stuff like that. And then that goes into like my next one was tapping feet, which we've already talked about at length, but just that's really important. If hopefully you don't get a kid that sneaks into percussion that can't tap their foot in time. Right.
Yeah.
But it does happen, where I see some kids or if there are going to be problems, it's always going to be with like upbeats. Right. So they're like tapping their foot here, but they're having to play one, te, te, three, te, four, one, te, 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 four or whatever. And so for that one, you just have to practice. We have an exercise like downs and ups, and it's literally just like one, two, three, four, te, 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 te. And then just like do that two bars over and over without stopping your foot.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else?
Not for that. No, I mean, that's all good.
Okay. Okay.
My last one.
Yeah.
Because I think you're going to say the last.
Are we going to talk about keyboard?
Yeah. I was just going to say for keyboards for me, yeah, it's the biggest thing is look at their music. But that one's pretty obvious. And then the other one I was going to say is make sure that just the mallet placement and their hand placement when they play mallets are just consistent. And you've got like if you're going to teach, you know, right hand is going to be a little bit further away from you when you're on the same key, then make that consistent and have them do it consistently. And then making sure they're just hitting the notes in the right spot. So not hitting on those nodes where the string is going through the holes. For the right sound to come out of the instrument. And then, you know, whether you teach to hit in the middle of the accidentals or on the edge of the accidentals, just make sure they're consistent there, and that you're, while you're learning music on mallets, that you're still watching for those things, so that they're just being consistent.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my last one too, was, again, things that I say it all the time. Stop looking at the keyboard. Like, look at your music. Stop looking at the keyboard. It's not going anywhere. It's not ever going to get any easier by looking at the keyboard. So you might as well just start now. You know, playing zones, I think, come with time, right? I mean, obviously you want to teach them the right place at the, from the get go, from the beginning. But I don't harp it too much unless I see kids just constantly smacking the nodes. And I do, I teach my kids to play in the middle of the accidentals, just because that is a better sound, right? And I mean, if it sounded equal, then we'd play on the edge of the natural bars too. Like, you know, like we don't play down there. It doesn't sound right. Better. It sounds better to play in the middle. And I just teach them, you know, which I'm sure you do too. The edge of the bar are for speed.
Yeah.
Right. When you're playing like fast stuff, so you don't have to move as far, but,
so it kind of does seem like it's, yeah. That's kind of the bottom of the totem pole is mallet placement, especially if you're just trying to get them to read music really well.
Right. Yeah. I'd much rather the kids smack every single node of the right note
right.
while reading right. music. Like, you know, I'd rather them understand that. And then later we could fix, you know, you can fix playing zones easily. But yeah, all that's really important stuff. And all, I mean, there's way more stuff I say every day, like, please be quiet for the love of all
stop,
that.
Stop playing out of turn.
Stop hacking. Yeah. All, you know, all of that stuff, but that's not as fun to talk about. So, well, yeah.
And I,
what have you got going on this week?
I was just going to say, I think your kids, like saying all these things to your kids will be a lot easier and useful when they're just used to hearing it all the time. So be a consistent teacher and like say the things that you know. Sometimes I'll even say something and I don't even actually see a kid doing it wrong. I'm just saying stuff like check your hand position or something just so that they can get used to hearing me say things like that so that they can always be a little conscious
or they're it. Just if you say it too much they're just going to be desensitized and tune you out completely.
That's true too.
Yeah, like we had a college director that where anytime they started talking everybody just immediately stopped listening because they just talked so much, but that was also because nobody liked them. I feel like my students liked me for the most part, so
whatever you think.
Right. Well, yeah, man, you got anything else for this one?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, how many more concerts do you have this year?
We have a jazz concert coming up on Tuesday and which it'll be over when people hear this. So by the time people are hearing this, we will have done a jazz concert. We will have done a jazz contest. We will have done a beginning band little clinic thing and gone to Incredible Pizza.
Nice.
Yeah. And then we just have like graduation and one more like middle school end of year concert.
So you guys don't have another high school concert?
Yeah, we usually do, but the kids are going on a trip. And because of the placement of that trip, they get back from that trip and only have 2 days of school. And so with the timing,
that's enough time to read Children's March.
So with the timing of all that, we had our concert like a week ago. And that was, we like let all the kids vote and they were like, yeah, we're okay with that being our last concert.
Like your last OSSAA, preview concert or whatever,
yeah, basically
before contest.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you?
Yeah. We have more than that. Wow. It's just the planning. You guys did just as much this semester. You guys are just done already. The way that our school works is like there's way too many things going on in the concert hall all the time. So we have to like use all of the calendar. So like my percussion ensemble concert is a week from tomorrow. So we still have not done that. And then we have our last, like what we call all city band concert, which is like, you know, every, both middle schools and the high school, every grade combines and does like a big concert. So like, you know, both sixth grade bands from each side of town come together and play the same pieces. And so we have that, like a week, just a little over a week after my percussion ensemble concert, which that should be good. Percussion ensemble should be good. Going to try to record this time and send in some tapes to like, Midwest and Pacific and stuff like that. If they're good, I don't know. They might end up not
if Latte's on the house is as best as it can be.
Yeah. If, so I'm having every, I don't know. I couldn't even come up with anything funny. I arranged Yellow After the Rain for
break drums for break drum quartet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fun.
Anyway. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. Hopefully you, got some useful tips out of that, or you were just entertained for 45 minutes or so. We'll have what we got, like one more, maybe two more episodes before the end of the school year.
One
more. And then, yeah, then we'll officially be in Percussion Perspectives summer. So we'll continue our, every other week dropping an episode. But we'll hopefully have some extra time to do some things in between that, whether that's like some reels or some short episodes or something
some
like
guests.
That. Some guests for sure. Yeah, things are just really busy right now. So anyway, hope you enjoyed it. Please, leave a comment or, you know, we had a few comments on Spotify. Yeah, I haven't read them yet. But I saw the email that we had comments.
Well, it was so just 50 coming. Comments on my solo episode.
Oh, good. And everyone was like,
yeah, keep it was like, keep up. It like this stuff.
Keep it. Yeah. Don't let that other guy come back, please.
Just kidding.
It's probably true.
No.
But yeah. And then, you know, I guess I have to, you know, I'll do a solo episode whenever you have like diarrhea or something.
I'll let you know.
Yeah. Just let me know.
All right. Thank you guys for listening.
All right, guys. Peace.